The next case is 2014-852, Cuyahoga County versus the Tax Commission. For the appellant, Cuyahoga County, Mr. Greenfield.
Good morning. May it please the court, I am Mark Greenfield, Assistant Prosecuting Attorney for Cuyahoga County Prosecutor's Office, here today representing the appellant, County of Cuyahoga, Ohio. The county seeks a tax exemption for property it owned from 2014, known as Whiskey Island. The property consists of approximately 61 acres. It includes a park, a marina, and a restaurant. The property was, there was an application for an exemption filed in 2006. In 2011, the tax commissioner determined that the park was exempt, split listed the property, and that the marina and the restaurant were not. There was an appeal taken from that decision in which the county challenged that decision to split list and sought, of course, that there be an exemption for the marina and the restaurant. The BTA heard the case. There was a full day hearing before the Board of Tax Appeals. A lot of evidence was presented, and the BTA in the county's opinion erroneously affirmed, essentially rubber stamping the tax commissioner's determination. So we are here today seeking reversal. And public property used exclusively for a public purpose shall be exempt from taxation. That's revised code 5709.08. Certainly exemption statutes are to be strictly construed, all the reasons that this court has heard and many other venues have heard before. But still, they have to be reasonable decisions. Matters of law get reviewed de novo. Here, though, in addition to the law not being applied correctly to the facts themselves were, in the county's opinion, ignored. There, when a decision of the Board of Tax Appeals is unreasonable and unlawful, when the significant factual determinations that it has made are not supported by reliable and probative evidence. And here, on the salient points germane to the determination, there's no support for what the BTA or the tax commissioner did. In fact, there's support for the opposite. And so the key points here are profit or no profit, nor a view towards a profit. There's a lot of law on that. You can have nonprofits not making a profit that don't get an exemption because they had a view towards a profit. Here, the county buys the property to prevent it from being an iron ore pellet storage facility. It was an eminent domain action filed by the Port Authority. That's what they were going to do. The county swoops in, literally, last minute, and buys the property. It's lakefront and riverfront property. They preserve the property. They hire the former owner. The sale, you know, it got raised at the BTA decision. The purchase price, the terms of the sale itself, not the management agreement, but the sale itself, are totally irrelevant to the determination of the outcome of the exemption application and this decision of this court. What's relevant is that, amongst other things, it's that there was no profit, that Whiskey Island Partners, Nancy Keene on the stand for 2 hours, and everybody else who testified to this point said there was not only not a profit, they weren't trying to make a profit. And that the management agreement, if you want to tie those two things together, and I do, and I'll come back to the management agreement on the control issue momentarily, didn't allow them to make a profit. They got a fee for services, a management fee for services, 7.5% of gross revenues. The rest of the money flowed to the county, inalterably, unequivocally. There's no fact, testimony, or evidence to the contrary.
But the now the private, the
Whiskey Island Partners.
WIP.
Right, that's fine.
When you say no profit, but they're making, aren't they as an entity making a profit from the management agreement?
I would say no. I would say that there's a fee for their services. They hire people, they pay them. That's an expense that comes out of the management fee. All of those things, they have to do that based on the fee that they earn. That the county, these are not, and we'll get to this issue, of course, too. No doubt Mr. Fossey will raise it, that they're not, and I want to, I don't know if I reserved time, but I guess when I'm done, I'll know how much time I have left. They had to pay their own employees. They had to do that. They weren't, and we hired them.
So what you're saying is they make the money off the management fee.
That's it. The tax commissioner got that wrong from the beginning.
But the management fee is a percentage of sales?
It's a percentage of gross revenues, yes.
Okay,
so the testimony is that they were in it to save, and there's all the testimony, that to save the property, to help the county preserve this property as a steward until, and now it's accomplished, the Metro Parks could take it over. The Metro Parks purchased the property at the end of 2014. Purchase might not be the right word when you pay a dollar, but so they essentially did it. The county doesn't know how to operate, doesn't have a park, a marina, a restaurant, doesn't have any of those things, and yet it did it for that reason, to preserve this critical lakefront property. The further testimony is that there was not only just a management fee paid, there was the management fee was for six consecutive years, the management fee on the restaurant, and at one time, and the evidence is all there in the record, and that's the ultimate fact checker here, is the record, is that they gave back or didn't take the management fee on the restaurant. Didn't take it for 6 years. It was only when Michael Chambers came in as the new operator, essentially, on behalf of the county, the CFO for the Public Works Department, did he insist that they take the fee for their services. They waived it for 6 years.
Was it always the intention of the county to ultimately transfer it to Metro Parks, or did that just come about later?
It was their intention. Keep in mind that Dan T. Moore, is a Metro Parks commissioner. He's on the board. Maybe he's not. Maybe I misstated that. He's on the board of the Metro Parks. I don't think he's. He may have been a commissioner. So that was always the purpose of doing that. So that was a goal. They gave back the money 6 years in a row. They only had a management fee. The commissioner, you know, and the BTA looked at it as a private public partnership with the private partner taking over the property for its profit-making purposes. But there's no profit, there's no view towards a profit, and even if you were to consider it profit, when keep in mind, again, that they had to pay all the expenses out of their own pocket from that management fee, they gave it back, half of the money back, and then on the other part, the management fee on the marina, which was essentially losing money most of the time, they deferred it a lot. And when the operation of the property wasn't, the revenues from the operation of the property weren't sufficient to sustain the property, Dan Moore loaned unsecured loans to the property, and this is in the record, to keep it afloat. This is the party that allegedly is profiting. They loan the money to keep it afloat, to keep it going. The management agreement itself allows the county to control the property, and did control the property. From the beginning, the Whiskey Island Partners had to submit every year an annual operating plan. It laid out the budget and the manner of operation of the property. Things down to the minutia of what's being served at the restaurant, who's going to be performing at the outdoor venue that's there, you know, at lunch or on the weekends for dinner. Things had to be painted, had to be repaired. The testimony is, again, uncontroverted. From Jay Ross, the first manager of the property, first county operator, you know, overseer of the property, Tim Poole, who operated the property as a manager for Whiskey Island Partners, Michael Chambers, who took over from Jay Ross later at the county, and everybody else who testified, set it forth that way, that they had the control of the property. Yes, they were Whiskey Island employees, but the county doesn't have a Parks Recreations Department. They weren't gonna, how were they even determined who was capable on their own of doing it, other than hiring the people who had did it and had the same purpose in mind? Then that was a key factor. You know, somebody could come in and operate it and make a lot of money and get and hire a national corporation. They didn't do that. They kept, and they could have fired Dan T. Moore or Whiskey Island Partners at any time. They didn't. They didn't because they thought they were operating the property sufficiently and with the same goal and purpose in mind. And I just want to make sure that I covered everything. At least. So I think that concludes. So we're asking for a reversal. We think that there, again, the factual determinations, significant factual determinations made by the PTA are totally unsupported by the record. Totally. We ask for a reversal. I reserve the remainder of my time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Greenfield. Mr. Fauci.
Thank you, Your Honor. Master Commissioner, Mayor, may it please the court. Before I launch into the sort of legal arguments that we made in our brief, I do need to correct a couple of statements made by counsel. So first of all, we don't think, you know, actual profit is relevant, and I'll explain that later. But the premise here is they were doing it with a view to a profit. This is a for-profit company. Nevertheless, when counsel was describing some of the details of the lack of profit here, let me clarify what's actually going on. So Whiskey Island Partners and the county entered into a contract wherein Whiskey Island Partners is entitled to 7.5% of gross revenue. Now think about what that means. That's gross revenue. That's not net. Doesn't matter if the county made money on this property or not. Whiskey Island Partners was entitled to 7.5%. And they never wrote that off. They may have not collected it, but they always carried that on their books as an obligation owed to them. Moreover, this idea that somehow they paid out of pocket for the management of this park, that doesn't hold any water. By contract, and we have the reconciliations of the budgets in this record, so by contract, by reconciliation of those budgets, you can see that operating revenues came out of the net. So the county is paying above the board for repairs, for employees, for all the stuff that goes into operating these. County's paying that. That's reducing the county's net profit. So Whiskey Island Partners is not paying that out of pocket, out of their gross. What they did on a few occasions was agree to waive gross profit. Now, back to the point whether profit's relevant. As counsel has indicated, this court has looked at cases where nonprofits are doing this stuff on behalf of public entities and held that even in that context, there's still a view to profit, and it's still not publicly operated property used exclusively for a public purpose. So even setting aside whether or not Whiskey Island Partners made money, this court has already held that that's irrelevant. Further, let's say that this court adopts the county's position. What it means is in every case we're going to have to ask, well, did they make any money this year? Is that the relevant inquiry? So in other words, did the private contractor make money this year? That's how we determine whether or not a property is going to be exempted for exclusively public use. And that's just contradicted by this bright line rule that the court announced in PERC more than 40 years ago. What PERC said was, when private enterprise is given the opportunity to occupy and use public property, even if in doing so it serves some public benefit thereby, When there's a view to a profit, the nature of the public property has changed such that it can't be considered used exclusively for public purpose anymore. So that's sort of the third part of the test here. We've been focused on this, whether it's exclusively used for public property, and we think that's an easy answer. The answer is no. You have a private entity here who, for profit, is occupying the property. And there was evidence at hearing that, you know, perhaps in some years they didn't make a profit or they withheld their management fee agreement. But frankly, any business starting up in the first couple of years, it's normal that you don't make money in the first couple of years. So again, that just drives us back into this sort of endless loop of...
When you say occupying the property, is it your contention that there is something in the nature of a lease or what you might call the functional equivalent of a lease in this case?
Right. So actually what we have here is a lease plus, because what you get is Whiskey Island Partners by contract has exclusive control. They are the only contractor that's allowed to enter these premises. The county entered the right to enter in the event of emergencies and to sort of observe and see what's going on. But it's Whiskey Island Partners who's boots on the ground running this property. And when we asked the county's, the person who's in charge of these operations for the county, whether they had any business operating a restaurant or a marina, his answer was simple, no. We don't have any business running a restaurant or marina. We don't do that. We don't have a restaurant department. We don't have a marina department. That's not something that we know how to do. We brought these guys in because they know how to do it, and we trust that they're going to do it to the best of their ability. That's why they're there. And so not only does Whiskey Island Partners get to occupy as the exclusive operator of this property, but they also they indemnify the city for loss, injury, accidents. They carry insurance on the property. They're providing all the employees. They're doing all the grounds work, all the maintenance. Somebody wants a table, they call in for a table at the restaurant. They're talking to a Whiskey Island Partner employee. They're not talking to the county. So this idea that, you know, that there's no lease and that should make a difference, that doesn't hold water either. And
A public entity can hire private contractors to perform work on the public property.
For sure.
For example, on the park, presumably they might hire a private contractor to mow the lawn or something.
For sure.
And yeah, that would not defeat the exemption.
Correct.
So it would be a crucial part of the analysis for there to be something in the nature of a lease or a functional equivalent, wouldn't it?
Well, so maybe another way to look at this, and setting aside the idea of a functional equivalent, is what the statute requires, and this tracks the constitutional language and, you know, going back to 1865, is exclusive public use. And so if I've engaged someone to come in and cut the grass, that hasn't changed what the property is being used for. The property is still being used as a park. There's just somebody who needs to come and cut the grass. But when you have a property that has a restaurant, a marina, and that's being used exclusively by a for-profit company, you see, that's the difference here. So we don't have sort of...
What about the control issue? Doesn't it matter what degree of control is exercised by the county here?
To some extent, I think it does. This court has looked at those, the questions of control in the past, but... When you have, as here, an easy case where it's we want turnkey operation, really the relationship here is more of a commercial landlord to a commercial tenant. The requirements on Whiskey Island Partners are to run this thing the way they ran it when they owned it. Control in the nature of when you got to be open, what you're going to put on the menu, that sort of thing, that's not any different than any of the sorts of normal contractual business obligations that companies take about. But what we're talking, when we talk about use, when we're talking about boots on the ground, fixing boats, putting them in dry dock, leasing slips, serving drinks, you know, all of that is being done by Whiskey Island Partners. There's no county employees there collecting dock fees. And I think it's important to counsel mention that, you know, the sale and purchase of this marina is not relevant. Actually, it's extremely relevant. The county commissioner we had on the stand testifying about this property was asked, I asked him point blank, what was the public purpose for the restaurant and the marina when you bought it? And he said, there really wasn't one. They needed to buy that property because it was part of the parcel. This was an 11th hour sale, and the only way they were going to get the park was if they bought the restaurant and the marina that he said we didn't really want, and that the county testified we don't know how to operate. So the previous owner, who financed this through various means, one of which was to sell these so-called docominium slips, whereby a person could buy essentially a condominium in a dock. And own that for 99 plus years. Yeah, docominium struck me as funny. The county agreed to assume those leases. So in other words, the county's honoring those without the benefit of that. This is no different than a private club to that extent. So to the extent that these spaces out there are being held by private interests who paid a previous private owner, that can't be considered exclusive public use. So I think the sale is relevant. I think it's actually extremely important to it. And the tax commissioner did the right thing in split listing the property.
You would agree there is some authority for a de minimis idea with respect to profits and even occupying the land in the Southwestern City School District golf course case there.
So
that doesn't apply here?
Well, it doesn't apply on its facts. And importantly, it doesn't apply on the law either. So Southwestern City Schools was a 5709-121 case. And so the court examined it under that statute, which talks about in furtherance of and incidental to. But importantly, in that case,
why doesn't 5709.121 apply here?
This application was only 5709-08.
Oh.
So it's only the public purpose, which, as we've explained, is a bright line rule. It is really only when private property occupies and uses public property, it loses its character as public
property. But doesn't 5709.121 define what exclusive public use is for purposes of .08?
Well, and assuming it does, then let's go to the facts of the Southwestern City Schools case. In that case, you had a city employee, I think it was a city golf course, who rented at cost an efficiency apartment on the property and made some incidental income off of selling golf merchandise.
Right. De minimis. Yeah.
And the court looked at that and said, the tax commissioner, there isn't a fully developed record here of him really profiting off of this. This seems to be just sort of a necessary tangent of operating the golf course. And when we're talking about an 18-hole golf course and the leasing of one efficiency apartment to one employee, that's not what we have here, where the private entity has been engaged to use and occupy the entire property.
Wasn't the pro shop also leased?
I don't think it was. I think if I recall the facts right, he was allowed to keep some of the profit from stuff he sold in the pro shop.
Either that or the restaurant. One of the businesses there was a lease.
I think it was. To my memory, there wasn't a lease. It was he rented an efficiency apartment there. It was the only lease in that case. But in any case, like you said, I don't think Southwest City Schools applies by its terms, and certainly the county hasn't ever pointed to 121 in this case. Although, as I said, I don't think that applies by its own terms. And really, when we talk about de minimis, there's some confusion over what incidental means. And if you look back at some of the Cleveland versus Kearney cases, the airport cases, the court there used the word incidental in a very different context in the public property realm. And it used the word incidental to mean necessary to the operation. So in that case, the court recognized that things like merchandise, food, car parking, all of that was necessary to operate at the airport, and they referred to it as incidental, but they still held that those properties weren't able to receive exemption because there was private operation for profit. It's made easier, as this court recognized in Kinney, where it talked about its Toledo decision by the split listing statute, Cleveland versus Carney, this court said in Kinney would have come out differently. And that's, I think, another and further refinement of my answer to Your Honor's question about does incidental matter. I think this court answered that question in PERC when it looked at Cleveland versus Carney, which was one of these incidental cases, and it involved the lease of a building on government-owned land in an airport, if I may finish.
No, sure. You're, okay. That's just your warning.
Oh, that's my
warning.
Okay. So, yeah. And so the court looked at this lease of a hangar on city-owned property, and it faced the tough choice of, you know, denying exemption for the entire airport based on this one hangar, or exempting it. And so it said that was a de minimis use, and it was exempt. Later in PERC, 40 years ago, this court looked at that same case and said, had we had the split listing statute, this would have come out differently. So I think that you're, to some extent, the de minimis use question is now achieved by and handled by the split listing statute, which is what the tax commissioner did in this case. He looked at the operation of the entire property and said, to the extent that there's private use on the park side, it's still entitled to exemption. But with regard to the restaurant and marina, it's clear that that's being operated for profit and is not entitled to exemption. You know, the General Assembly knows how to make public property exempt when somebody else is using it or leasing it. And it didn't do so in the context of restaurants and marinas. We have revised code 5701081 that was enacted a couple years ago that talks about municipally owned convention centers. And that statute specifically says, even if it's leased to somebody else, that the convention center may still be considered exempt. So that's a recognition by the General Assembly. This case law has been around for a long time. And they understand that when public property is leased by or used by a private party, they need to statutorily set forth that that's still an exempt public use. And like I said, they haven't done so in this case. The statute hasn't been amended. And so we're left with a non-public use. Further, there's a three-part test here. We have, if there are no other questions, I'm sorry.
Finish up quickly.
Okay, thanks. So we have a three-part test here. We have owned by a public entity, used for a public purpose, used exclusively for a public purpose. And like I said, we focused really on three, but we also appointed in our brief to a failure of the second prong too. This property really hasn't been shown to be used for a public purpose. The only open and free to the public here were a handful of dock slips that were near the restaurant where people could tie up free of charge for the day.
Okay.
Other than that, they're serving the public in the same manner as any other restaurant marina would in the area, which this court has recognized. It's the goal of industry to serve the public.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Fauci. Yes, Mr. Greenfield, you've reserved 3 minutes and 42 seconds for rebuttal.
Right where I wanted to be, Your Honor. Thank you. So, of course, the tax commissioner's counsel and I disagree on a couple of things. One is that this is lakefront property. It's recreation. Recreation is a public use. Village of Cadiz. There's just no issue there. The fact that somebody has to pay a dock fee or, you know, has to buy a drink at the restaurant doesn't change that. County, not only did the county collect all the revenues and pay only a management fee, it paid a management fee for services rendered, but Whiskey Island Partners had no view towards a profit. I would agree and do agree with Mr. Fauci and the tax commissioner that making a profit or not making a profit, being successful or not being successful, the entity that is doing the management doesn't matter, profit, nonprofit, or otherwise. They had no view towards a profit. They didn't try to make a profit. It's a 99-cent jar of mayonnaise. Nancy Keene testified to that, the CFO of Dan of Whiskey Island Partners and works for Dan T. Moore. He did it because he loved the property, his family connection to the property, his daughter, whose name is given to the park, Wendy Park. And the whole property was operated and managed by them for the, on that basis. The business model does matter. It's not a lease. It's not the typical business arrangement. Landlords of tenants don't try to find out what a restaurant, let's say, is serving for dinner and what hours of operation. They don't go and check on those kinds of things. But they did sit down, Whiskey Island Partners, did sit down every year and review carefully, in the record, all of this, the management of the property, the amount it would cost to run the property, what would be run at the property, and when things were changed or altered at the property, over $1,000 or $1,500, they had to come running to Jay Ross or Mike Chambers to get permission. They had to do that. It's not a turnkey operation. This is not privatization. That's a mischaracterization. And I'd just like to point out, I don't know if it'll be finally, but I think so. Two things, actually. The county could, I'll go back to this. The county could terminate Whiskey Island Partners at any time. There was a little exchange at the end of the, Mr. Fossey no doubt will remember it as I do, with Michael Chambers and he about Michael Chambers saying, yeah, I could terminate them, and where does it say that? And he said, well, I can fire Whiskey Island Partners, so indirectly, I can fire any employee. And that's the county's perspective on how they ran that property. They ran the property like they run their other $1 billion or hundreds of million dollars of property. Lastly, the revenues, and this is from the record, that book that I didn't stand up because I figured it would fall over. But the tax commissioner introduced a lot of exhibits, which were vetted during discovery. And one of the exhibits, some of the exhibits had to do with revenues and profit. And so during the course, I'm just, my last point, during the course of 2005 to 2012, the revenues from this property were $14,509,000. Now that's not an exact number, I rounded. I didn't have a calculator with me, I had my cell phone. The management fees paid, remember, $14,509,000. The management fees paid $762,000. Thank you. I urge a reversal.
Thank you, Mr. Greenfield. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.